Hey, it's Natasha. Come see me soon. In April, I'm going to be at Brea Improv in Brea, which is very close to LA. I'm also going to come to Chicago in April. Look at my website. I don't know the exact date. And I'll be in Las Vegas in May. I'll be in Tempe, I think in May. And also I'm going to be in Boston and Providence in the fall. I don't really know the dates by heart, but just come see me. Look at my website. Buy tickets. They'll sell out. Come see me. I love you.
Hi, Honeymooners. It's Moshe. I've got some live dates coming up too. May 12th, I'll be at the Troubadour in LA. And you can see me in Philadelphia in July. Also, New York City in July the, I believe, 11th. August, Sacramento, California. And then all the way in November, I'll be in DC and also in Seattle. So go to MosheKasher.com for all your updates.
And one more thing, we had an amazing dinner party with all of our honeymooners.
We make it a killer spaghetti.
We made killer spaghetti for all of our Patreon listeners who are...
Well, we didn't make it for them. They had to make it themselves, but we made it for us.
It's incredibly easy. Even I could almost make it. But why would I? Because Moshe's a better cook.
We had a great gathering of honeymooners. If you would like to be one of those honeymooners, get on that Patreon. Get on that tier that gets you that invite to that dinner party. Ain't that right, Tosh?
Yeah, and we always have such great conversations, and it's really fun.
But we got, speaking of fun, we got our big Netflix is a Joke podcast taping coming up May the 4th.
In Los Angeles.
We have some special guests to announce.
I wanted to say it was at one of my favorite venues in the world, the Hollywood Forever Cemetery.
It's the best. No sneezing while we do plugs for our upcoming dates, Natasha.
Wow, that scream sneezing felt good.
I'm telling you, it's like a little bit, a petite orgasm. Anyway, speaking of petite orgasms, you're going to get a comedy major orgasm when we tell you our special guests for the podcast taping at Hollywood Forever as a part of Netflix's The Joke are Atsuko Okatsuka and...
Sabrina Jalees.
Two very funny people. We cannot wait. Tickets are going quick. They're almost gone, actually. So if you're in the LA area, get... your shit.
I mean, you should even come just to see this venue. It is so amazing. It's in a Masonic lodge at the Hollywood Forever Cemetery. And also, if you want to be on the show, send us an email. We need guests. Endless, we have guests, but we might need more. You never know.
honeymoonpod@gmail.com. You can get into the show for free if we pull you up on stage and you allow me, Natasha, Atsuko, and Sabrina to make fun. Goodbye, everyone. Welcome to the Endless Honeymoon Podcast Oscar Night Edition. Natasha, you are dressed to the nines.
You know, I got it in Chinatown. And it,
did you really?
Yeah.
Did you get this accent in Chinatown?
Mm-hmm.
You got a whole new thing mm-hmm. You're doing.
Listen, it's a fake fancy outfit, but we were invited to a party, so I threw it on.
What I am struck with your outfit here, Natasha, is, and this is going to be kind of a similar bit to the bit that we did on our 200th episode, but I have to point it out. We got invited to a...
I'm not dressed like the couch. I'm not.
You're not dressed like the couch at all. You're not dressed like the couch in any way. That wasn't even close to where I was going with this. We got invited to a party through Natasha's deep Hollywood connections. I'm her plus one. It's humiliating. I feel cucked out. It's an Oscar viewing party hosted by the one and only Byron Allen. And after the Oscars, performing this evening for an intimate crowd is the legendary Diana Ross.
That's why I'm going.
And that's why you're dressed like the legendary Diana Ross.
We have the same birthday.
Oh, you think that's how it is?
Yeah. And honestly, Coke Money, my CD that mm-hmm. I put out, was like a direct, you know, steal.
Oh, it was an imitation of one of her album covers?
Uh-huh.
Oh, nice. What was it? What album was of hers?
I don't remember.
That's kind of cool. So
it's like a whole photo shoot she did that was like all diamond heavy.
Mm, that's kind of cool. So you took
I don't expect her to be impressed with me. I just want to meet her.
So just so, maybe here's an opener for you. You say, I took the emotional, creative, and intellectual labor of an African-American superstar. And I co-opted it for my own financial gain. And I called
it... for my
it-
album, Coke Money. Okay, listen.
Listen, we're going to see Diana Ross. I'm so excited.
But Diana Ross is like, you know, not just an icon, but a guru.
Is she? Is she like deep also?
She's a deep guru for me. I think because of her birthday and we have the same birthday, I always thought of her as like a mentor. So I'm very excited to see her. I do not expect her to appreciate me in any way, but I would love to get a photo with her if possible.
I'm feeling like that's very possible. Natasha, who else is a shared birthday with you?
Tennessee Williams.
That's a good one. That's solid.
Robert Frost.
That's real good.
Yeah.
Diana Ross, Tennessee Williams, and Robert Frost. Those are good.
It's like deepness. What about you? What about your birthday, July 6th?
Similarly deep, to be honest.
Is it Hitler?
No, that's April 20th.
I have another boyfriend who's...
Oh, nice. Okay. You have another boyfriend currently or an ex-boyfriend?
I had an ex-boyfriend and I was thinking it was you who had Hitler's birthday, but you have David Bowie's birthday.
Do I?
July 6th?
That is my birthday. But
Who are your birthday people? Is it not David Bowie?
Similar deepness level to Robert Frost, Tennessee Williams, and Diana Ross. Sly Stallone. Madonna.
Ooh, Madonna. That's not bad.
I believe it's Madonna. I could be wrong about that. But most importantly, the one and only Kevin Hart. Not only does Kevin Hart and I
That's respectable.
Share a birthday, we're the same age, exactly. We were born on the same day, same year.
Interesting. I always think of you as being very young, so I'm going to start thinking of Kevin Hart as being young as well. Listen, our guest is waiting for us.
Absolutely. Marcia. Let's get to the meat of the thing. We have a very special guest today. I'm excited for this fella to come on. Unfortunately, he's outside of state lines, so he's going to be here zooming in.
Oh, man.
But you know him from Reservation Dogs. And he's an activist and a comedian and the founder of the 1491 Comedy Troupe. I'm excited. The one and only, Dallas Goldtooth.
Hello, hello, hello.
Hi, Dallas. We can't see you, but we can hear you.
We're going to see if I can. All right,
Hey, there you are. There's your pretty face. How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you guys doing?
Good. I'm Moshe.
Hey, Dallas. Thanks for doing this. It's Natasha.
Yeah, I'm sorry I can't be there in person.
Same. Where are you?
I'm in Chicago.
Ah.
I'm from Rockford, Illinois.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
All right. I know nothing about Rockford other than it's on the way home to Minnesota. It's a pass-through city.
Well, my mother is from...
You know all you need to know.
My mother is from Duluth, so Chicago to Minnesota, that's our whole world, too. Is that...
Oh, snap. You're a Midwest kid in heart, would you say?
Yes. And I actually wish, you know, I think here's like a problem with being born from the Midwest. I remember we really never had many vacations and fun things to do. And it would have been nice to, you know, go to the lakes or go travel.
You never went to a lake?
You never did lakes?
Just a lake?
No.
You went to Minnesota, but you didn't visit a lake?
We would like stop on the freeway and sleep.
Dallas,
did you ever get to see the stars? Did you see the sky?
We really didn't.
They weren't allowed to, Dallas. They couldn't afford it.
Well, there wasn't like, no one knew to do that. So we would just like drive to Minnesota and then like stop on the side of the road and sleep in the car.
Now, Dallas, you're from Minnesota, from the Minnesota.
I am proud, born and raised.
Now, tell me if I'm wrong here. There's a couple of lakes. They have lakes there?
Just a handful.
Yeah, just a couple of lakes.
Here and there.
Could have gone to a fucking lake.
Hey, yeah. I wasn't driving. I don't know. I mean...
Dallas Goldtooth.
She had no power. That's
right.
Situation.
Dallas Goldtooth, actor, comedian, activist. I was curious. What's the relationship between comedy and activism? Is it difficult to make things that are activism worthy funny, or do you find it a natural connection?
Oh, it's so fucking hard, man. Like, yeah. I can't. It's so hard. Like, you know, I'm relatively new to the world of acting, right? Mm-hmm. And I've been organizer activist for many, many years. And, you know, I'm trying to get into, you know, acting and writing and doing other stuff. I'm been talking about a podcast, and I had a couple of meetings and where folks were like, oh, that's great. You were an organizer. You did activism and now you're doing comedy. Can we do a comedy activism podcast? And I'm like, dude, that's hard to think. Like, it's hard to bring those worlds together for me almost because of just like the personas involved, I think, are so strong. But, you know, I guess in my activism, I tried my best. I always kept, like, I've been known as a joker. I'm as known as a comedian in my activism. But going the other way, and the, like, I don't know how to bring it so that people can understand it has always been a challenge for me.
Yeah, well,
and it should be because it's not funny.
Yeah, some
it isn't. It's like someone was like, "Oh, you should do a podcast on climate change. You should talk about climate change and make it funny." I'm like, it's not like I'm not going to sit there with celebrities and talk about what feel good thing they did outside their Trader Joe's. Like, that's not funny, and that's not really doing anything.
Oh, Kate Blanchett telling you about how she started recycling more robustly.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yes.
What? I'm curious. What is the thing right now that you are kind of fired up about? I was reading a little bit about Arctic pipelines and stuff like that, but you know more about it than us. What's the, and make it really, really, make it really 10 out of 10 funny. Okay.
So just make it funny. let's talk about saving the world. One, you know, douche shampoo made by Gwyneth Paltrow at a time. Here we go.
One goop. One goop at a time.
It's called a goop shampoo, honey.
Yeah, yeah.
Goop shampoo. Sorry. I didn't mean to offend anybody out there.
Well, let's get into it. What is it about the rich Hollywood elite that annoys you so much?
And who do you have for your best picture pick?
Oh, man. No, I, you know, I actually, it's not even that. I don't have enough. I don't really care enough about like where celebrity and the celebrity culture of activism, because it's needed. There is a role. There is a lane for celebrities and people who are influencers who have a following. And really, it's about amplifying the voices of people who are doing the work. It's amplifying the struggle. It's amplifying what needs to be done. And sometimes there are activists, there are organizers, there are celebrities and influencers who are doing the work, but for the most part, I think that it's just getting out of the mindset, and this is not just a challenge for celebrities, but for all of us, is getting out of the mindset of an individualistic kind of approach to organizing, that I as an individual doing my part, so we're good. And really, it's about collective organizing. That's how we build power. That's how we move forward. And connecting the dots is absolutely essential for creating change. As far as where the big I'm like super interested in, or what is fueling my fire? Oh man, it's a whole range. I mean, the world's on fire, right? The shit's fucking chaotic.
Can I ask you a question? What is the opposite of an individualistic approach in terms of what you're talking about?
Well, I feel like, so for a number of years, I was organizing against the Keystone XL pipeline, which was a large scale oil pipeline that was going to be transporting oil from the tar sands of Alberta, Canada, down to the Gulf of Mexico. And we fought that for almost a decade. And there was a lot of celebrity engagement. I mean, that was a big part of our strategy, was to get greater awareness, to get celebrities to tweet about it and show up for these meetings, or show up for events to help amplify it. And I think that...
How'd it work?
We beat it. We fucking won. Like,
that's amazing.
That was a big story.
In 2015, 2016, President Obama eventually... killed the pipe, said, you know, denied the president the permit for it. And then Trump got in, he brought it back to life, but we fought it again and fought it off enough to where it was dead in the tracks. And the company TransCanada had basically abandoned the project, which is fucking awesome. That was a massive oil pipeline that was killed by frontline people, native peoples, like white ranchers and farmers all across Nebraska and South Dakota, who really came together.
Is that right, that there was a lot of ranchers coming together with indigenous groups to fight against the pipeline?
Yeah, dude, that was just crazy, man. Like, one of the first meetings I ever went to, it was like this, it was a public hearing in South Dakota. It was about the pipeline route. And there's all these native folks in there who are talking about why they were there. And there was these like white ranchers. There's this white rancher guy that was there with his wife.
John Dutton, right? From Yellowstone.
No.
Yeah.
But he shows up. We love him. He's wearing his like American cap, veteran cap, everything. And, you know, he's a proud Republican, right-wing voter, strong conservative from Western Nebraska. But he was against this project because it was impacting his property rights, and the issue for him was eminent domain. Mm-hmm. But long story short, fast forward like 4 or 5 years later, the same guy, who still proud conservative, that didn't change, But what did change is that when he got up and spoke about why he was fighting this pipeline, he was like, it's not just about my rights, but it's also about indigenous rights and treaty rights.
Wow.
It's about the right for people to have access to clean water and to have a say about what happens to their land, water, and issues, and or their land, body, and water. And it was just a really great thing to see that's the collective organizing, right? We brought people in who came into it with their individual approach. I'm only here because this impacts me in this limited way. And then by connecting the dots to other people's fight, his approach was like, okay, I'm in this because we are all collectively against this for the greater good.
That's super. And that's amazing.
That was the power of that.
That's really powerful because I'm sure you and everybody else that's listening is aware, we've become walled off behind ideology to such a degree that, like, even if someone is your natural bedfellow in terms of your struggle or the thing you're fighting for, if they don't act like you, vote like you, look like you, you'll say that's my enemy. I'm not involved. So that's really powerful work to work so hard that you can sort of transcend that kind of trench warfare that we're in the middle of.
Oh, absolutely. I think that's, you know, I think it comes with the lived experience of growing up in the Midwest, where I grew up in Southwest Minnesota and South Dakota a little bit. I'm Native American. I'm Dakota. And like, I grew up just being surrounded by white folks. And a lot of times there's poor white farmers or just middle-class white kids and white folks around me. And when you're in the Midwest, especially in rural Midwest, you get the right wing, you get the left wing, you get all that and everyone else in between. And it really is a different sense of community when you're immersed in that. So I feel like that really influenced me as far as my approach to activism, organizing, and just working in community.
I got a question for you, because you've, I think, explained pretty clearly the power of collective action. I don't find, I mean, obviously the I've done enough disease is an issue. But the bigger issue to me, I think, is I can't do anything. It's like it's like you don't even get to the point where you're posting on Instagram about how great the activism you're doing is, because you're just sitting in fear going like, what good does it do if I do anything, right? How do you get from your couch to starting, you know, like how do you get rid of that feeling of I can't change anything, so I might as well do nothing?
Oh man, I mean, that's we get paralyzed, right? And then also the anxiety. We have this climate anxiety, or social justice anxiety. Shit is happening so fast that you can't help but sometimes be a fucking deer in headlights, and you're like, oh fuck, I don't know what to do. Do I jump left or right? Where do I go? And you know, I don't have a clear answer for that, but I feel like what we are doing, I think we're getting better. Meaning that I think with social media and the power of the internet and social media, there was a freaking steep learning curve of how we communicate issues and problems and activate folks to get involved. Now, I really think back to 2020 was a key moment for us across, at least within the United States, right? Of like, yeah, the pandemic, but then you had all the social justice issues around Movement for Black Lives happening at the same time. And what we saw is what I think what the question you're referring to is like, what do I do? What's my part to play? Is people started instigating questions within their world, within what they had impact over, right? So people started asking about, okay, how does my city involve, am I being engaged in anti-blackness? How is my institution involved in this? How are schools involved in promoting anti-blackness, and how do we confront that? So I think it starts on little questions around the realm of influence that you have. Now, a person that has a podcast of a million followers or a million listeners, or even a podcast of 50,000, has a greater reach than maybe just Joe Schmo, who's just works at a 9-to-5 and somewhere down the street. But there still is a realm of influence that they may have, and it's having constant dialogue with folks around them and say, hey, what are we doing about this? Or what's your thoughts on this? A lot of my activism time lately, well, the past 2 years, was really focused on divestment, right? To how do we divest from fossil fuels? How do we hold the people who are giving money to the corporations who are killing this planet? How do we hold them accountable? And that really is a way in for a lot of folks saying, how are the institutions I live in and a part of and feed into feeding the killing of this planet? And so that was a great eye-opening experience for me, is I work with folks to say, okay, where are you putting your money? Mm. And the people you're giving your money to, who are they giving money to? And do you support that or not? And if not, move your money somewhere else.
Well, we have 85% of our savings in Exxon and
it's
Shell.
It's cold in my... I don't have heat in my little office here, and so.
Oh, you're
that's why I'm all bundled up.
You're personally divesting. Natasha and I have 85% of our income invested in Exxon and Shell oil. Is that bad? No, we're just kidding. We're just joking.
No, but let me ask you this: as you know, a person trying to teach people in the next generation, as a father, like, what do you think we can do as parents to try to? Because that is really who we're relying on, right?
Yeah.
Like these new kids, these new people who are learning about the earth in a new way. I know my kid is, and she has a very specific view of the world and what could kill it. And she's being, you know, indoctrinated in a good way, I guess, about like climate change and recycling and what her part is and saving the earth and graffiti and
we gotta stop graffiti littering. And big oil. Those are our two big causes.
She's like when we go, but when we go hiking. And someone has, like, you know, done a graffiti sign on a tree, she gets upset. Or, you know, if
she's like a little cop, basically.
No, but I'm
how old is your kid?
She's 35.
She's five.
No, she's 5 years old. You have kids, right?
I have kids. I have five kids.
Whoa.
I have five kids. Yeah. And it's a range. We have a 21-year-old. And we have a 3-year-old.
So like with the younger kids, to Natasha's question, how much of this, what do you teach about how much of the, because you know, being this deep in the activism game, you know some dark shit about the world. How much of that scary stuff do you give to them in terms of your education and teaching them how to be activists too? Like, what do you tell them?
Oh man, I mean, I'll be honest. Like, there was a point there where talking with my wife, we were like, we kind of don't want to bring any more kids into this world, given the future that they may have, right?
Well, after like, five, that is a very valid.
Yeah, you capped yourself at five. You're like, you know what?
Five. We're like,
we only did five.
Maybe eight. We'll get to eight and we'll reconsider.
I think it's
five
funny.
Five is respectable.
It's crazy you got to five kids before you had that conversation. We had one kid and we were like, we don't want to bring any more kids into this world, not for activism purposes, but just so that we could go to Europe.
Oh, that's real. That's real. No, it's a question I struggle with on a daily basis of like, how do I bring my child up into this world that knowing that there's a good chance that their future is going to be a bit more difficult than mine.
Right.
And you know, the best I can do is just to keep to my values and principles and make sure do my best to pass that on. Right. And really to, I think the hope is that our children develop a greater sense of empathy, not only for their lives, but for the lives of people around them and folks they don't even know, and have a greater sense of emotional intelligence. I think that if that's something that I've learned over the years is having a greater sense of emotional intelligence about why I'm doing the things I'm doing. Why, you know, and every decision I make, I try to make that moment to stop and say, okay, why am I doing this and where am I at in this? And I think that's something I really like to pass on to my kids, hoping that they can contribute that be a part of their contribution to society.
Why do you spend so much of your life energy fighting? I mean, I'm sure it gets tiresome and that it'd be nice to just focus only on Hollywood stuff. You got great acting jobs recently. You were in Reservation Dogs, a really great show. Like, is there some... Do you struggle with that split? Like, God, I just want to give up and just indulge myself in pleasure and stop fighting.
Oh, yeah. I think that there's a balance of like, how do we stop? You know, you're fighting against something, and how much time do you get to fight for something? Mm-hmm. So just recently, like this is a recent update. Like for past 9 years, I worked for a nonprofit organization called the Indigenous Environmental Network. Amazing organization, supports frontline Indigenous communities across Turtle Island, aka North America. And I had to make the decision to step away because, one, I was tired. I am tired. I just got like, you know, just kind of like just burnt out. And then two, there was more opportunities coming up to write, to be in. I was a part of the writer's room for Reservation Dogs or some other writing opportunities coming up. And then there's the acting on top of it. And so I was like, you know what? I want to take a moment to explore this other side of me that I haven't had to get to explore, the creative side of me.
Your talent, energy-wise, yeah. It's like, it's so hard to let go, but like, you know, creative-wise, like your creativity is your talent, and that is not necessarily returning calls and getting people on the front lines, and it's so challenging.
Yeah.
It's a tough one. So I've moved away. I'm doing contract work with my organization. I'm going to help provide strategy and advisement on the key campaigns. But, you know, what has always moved me is I've never lost sight of what we're fighting for. You know, we're fighting for a living economy. We're fighting for sustainable development within our communities. We're fighting for self-determination, that communities get to decide for themselves what happens to the air, their water, their bodies. And, you know, I think that we are in a moment of just transition, meaning that, you know, we all believe, I'm not a freaking idiot. Like, we can't shut off the valves right at this moment. We can't, you know, completely just wake up tomorrow and be fossil free because our infrastructure is not set up that way. Things are not set up in a way to make it sustainable. But we have to transition towards a better future, absolutely, like right now.
And the energy.
But we have to do it. We have to do it in a just manner. I think that's the key thing.
Mm-hmm. And also, like, acting and every enterprise, every creativity, every life force, like everything needs passion behind it because capitalism is like absorbing everything. So I think that like the more in our careers we can like try to have activism, and the more in, you know, every element of our lives we can try to have activism is really important because you know, we're being kind of swallowed whole by this money energy that is very hard to, you know, it's
break
very
free of.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, I feel like the way the system is designed and the way our society is set up is it's really hard for us as a society to radically imagine a future that's livable, that's just. Like, we can, as creatives, we can talk about a world. We can fucking make Avatar movies and all this other shit out there. But to imagine how we as a society can actually make steps to make some of those dreams possible, it's really fucking hard. And so, like, we need to create space for ourselves to live in our contradictions, to know that, hey, yes, we want a better future, but right now, like we are dependent on things that are killing the planet, to live in that contradiction, but also to move towards a better and just society and allow ourselves to dream of that future so that we can manifest it.
So is being an activist on some level is being an optimist. Are you an optimist? And do you have an optimistic view of the future?
Oh yeah, I'm totally optimist. I used to piss off people because I was such an optimist in my organizing work because they're like, aren't you supposed to be mad? I'm like, it's fucking funny. Like, this is so dysfunctionally funny that you can't help but laugh. Like, we're in the middle of a fucking courtroom in the middle of like nowhere, a pier, South Dakota. And there's literally all these suits coming in, flying in. Like, we're in a bad 1980s action movie right now.
yeah.
Where all the suits come in from Denver and they're here to take the land. Like, it's like, come on now. You can't have to laugh about this.
So, I mean, I think that is like maybe the connection. I want to know more. I want
to
hear.
We also have people who are waiting to talk to us.
Okay, fine.
One last note is I wanted to say this. There is a difference. I see myself more as an organizer as opposed to activist. And there's like those things often get confused.
Yeah.
And so I always like to take an opportunity to really break it down that there is a difference between an activist and an organizer. And there's nothing inherently bad about either one of those. But I am a strong advocate that we need more organizers. An activist is somebody who you can depend on to show up. Something's going down. The school board wants to burn all the books. Mm-hmm. You're a person that you can depend on to show up and say, that's fine. Fucked up. We're not going to do that. An organizer is somebody that builds collective power to stop these decisions from happening, whether beforehand or after or during.
And how do you get to be an organizer?
And so becoming an organizer is just the understanding of, like, you need to bring, you can't do it alone.
Mm-hmm.
You have to pull folks in. So in many ways, we're all just little, like, we're all bits of organizers within us, but really we need more organizers.
You need people more leaders.
More leaders, more people willing to collaborate and connect and build power together.
We're all into followers right now, but we need more leaders, unfortunately.
But I think that Dallas made a really interesting point earlier that speaks to your, Natasha, and your anxiety about the internet. The internet obviously can be rotting, have a rotting effect on children's heads and on society's ability to get along. But in a very direct way, it also made young people get all this more information. Like, I didn't have a real political thought, I feel like, until I was like 28 years old. Like, I didn't know who the district attorney was in Oakland growing up ever. And I feel like every 12-year-old now is like, you know, is saying, you know, we have to impeach the district attorney of and city councilman 42. Like, they're so savvy and so interesting and so politically connected now. That is a move forward.
I think it is. I talk to my kids. I have two kids in high school, and I was like, dude, you realize how fucking far ahead you guys are from where we were at? Like,
right
in high school, like, you were either a jock or nerd or out. There was only three categories,
right?
You were a jock, a nerd, or the outsider emo kid, and like
smoking cigarettes at McDonald's,
right?
That's all we were allowed. That's what you, those are the lanes.
The jocks were like unacceptable. What else was there?
Nerds,
no nerds. Way. I was definitely more smoking cigarettes at McDonald's, but I didn't smoke the cigarettes.
Yeah, what were you?
I was the nerd. I was a nerd. Okay. That's why I identified it. But it's just, there is the advantages to it. Like, we're progressing at such speed. That's actually kind of, I think that feeds into our anxiety, right?
Right.
So, yeah.
No,
I know there's people waiting. I think
Jocks, you have jocks, nerds, emo kids. You have people that are participating in activism against the XL pipeline. You have people that are trying to get to 100 million followers on Instagram. You have people that have burgeoning pop music careers. Things have changed. Dallas. Yeah. Okay, yes, we should get to the people, but shouldn't we talk about Reservation Dogs? Exciting thing that's happened to you? It's such a great show.
So, backstory: Reservation Dogs. The showrunner, his name is Sterling Harjo. He's a good friend of mine. Him, myself, along with three other guys, we created a sketch comedy group about 15 years ago, and we just did YouTube videos. That's what we did: sketch comedy. And then we started doing live sketch comedy improv shows, and he got this show, and so he brought all of us on along with some other amazing writers to make it happen. And so I'm really excited to have been on this journey. I mean, we're about to start shooting season 3 next week, and what I see in the show Reservation Dogs, if you haven't seen it, is it's we're creating space to do what I was saying is to radically imagine, what does it mean to be indigenous? What does it mean to be native in America for a lot of folks? Because a lot of mainstream society don't really know what does it mean to be native in America. And now here's a chance for them to see that, to understand what the hopes and dreams of a native kid living in middle of Oklahoma who's dealing with grief. And how do we explore that grief and experience through comedy?
I mean,
it's a great show.
It is a great show. And maybe that is the connection piece between the first half of our conversation and this is like you were talking about not being able to imagine a future in which, you know, we're not as dependent on fossil fuels, or not being able to imagine a livable and sustainable future with how awful things are currently, but also probably 20 years ago or even right before you guys started 1491, is that what it's called?
Yeah.
Imagining having a hit show on FX that shines a light on just day-to-day life for indigenous kids, like that probably was an unimaginable future that required a kind of optimism to move forward. So it's like in that way there's a metaphor for the future of everything too. If you can do it creatively, maybe you can do it societally.
Oh, absolutely. I'm a firm believer in story-based strategy and all the work that we do. Like, look, the world what changes the world are stories. Mm-hmm. Where our entire existence is based on stories, right? What does it mean? What is gender? What is currency? What is hierarchies? It's all fucking stories, man. That's all we're doing is just telling stories and then saying, yeah, you're right. Your story is legitimate and their story over there is not legitimate. That's all we do. And so in order to change the world around us, we just have to tell the fucking most enticing story ever. And that's the work of an organizer. That's the work of an activist. That's also the work of a writer and a comedian, whatever it may be, is we're just telling fucking stories and making them as enticing as possible. And if you can drop in little kernels of truth or a little, like, you know, hey, a little nudge of saying, all right, this is where I'd like you to go, like, that's fucking great.
Well, there's no more enticing story than in the future we'll be able to breathe. So I think that is the story we must keep telling. All right, cool. Well, we have some people waiting.
I know that you are a father. Are you able to take some relationship advice with us?
Oh, hell yeah. I'm actually excited for this part. Okay.
You've had the conversation we just had a million times, but you've never done this. And
yeah, I'm here for
all
this.
All right, here we go. We're going to call Adina in Tel Aviv. Oh, we've got an international caller. How exciting.
Hey, Tosh.
Yeah, Mosh.
Have you ever thought about taking out a life insurance policy with Fabric Life Insurance
every
by Gerber
day
to pay you out and our child out in case of my untimely demise?
Oh my gosh, wouldn't that be awful?
Fabric was designed by parents for parents to help you get a high-quality, surprisingly affordable term life insurance policy in less than 10 minutes.
It takes less than 10 minutes to apply, see your quote, and then get a personalized quote to fit your family's needs. You could be offered coverage instantly with no health exam required.
Is it a little bit of a dark thing to think about? Sure. But isn't it darker to think about your family being left in the lurch by you getting hit by a car?
You know, my dad got life insurance, and when he died last year or a few months ago, I got a big cash settlement.
Fat payout. If you want them kids of yours to get fat payout, protect your family today with Fabric by Gerber Life. Apply in just 10 minutes at meetfabric.com/honeymoon.
That's meetfabric.com/honeymoon. M-E-E-T fabric.com/honeymoon.
Policies issued by Western Southern Life Assurance Company. Not available in certain states. Prices subject to underwriting and health questions. Hey, Tosh.
Yeah, Mosh.
Would you mind looking at this growth I have on my groin and then possibly doing some help to get rid of it for
me? I'm good.
Fine. You want me to go to a doctor? Then I'm going to call ZocDoc. I'm not going to call him. I'm going to click him because it's an app.
You're extremely unlikely to find quality medical advice in your group chat, but you can find it from a doctor on ZocDoc. Thousands of medical professionals on ZocDoc are there to help you. They listen like a friend and give you the expert care that you need.
I know we've said this before, but both Natasha and I used ZocDoc long before they became a sponsor of this podcast because it's the easiest way to find and book a doctor that is patient-reviewed, takes your insurance, and are available, this is the important part, when you need them, and treat almost every condition under the sun. I don't want to call from office to office to office to see if there's available appointments. I go to ZocDoc, and I find all of the available appointments near me.
And you can also see some of the available appointments are online for Zoom appointments. Some of them are in person. You can see how many miles they are from your home. You can see all of the doctor's reviews. It is an awesome app. I love this thing.
Go to ZocDoc.com/honeymoon and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. Many are available within 24 hours.
That's ZocDoc.com/honeymoon. ZocDoc.com/honeymoon.
Adina.
Hi.
Hi. How are you?
Good. I'm a little nervous.
Oh, don't be nervous. We've already talked about the end of the world, about the power of storytelling, about collective organizing. I mean, at this point, this is going to be very easy. Adina, we're here
with me, Natasha, Moshe, and our friend Dallas Goatooth.
Yep. So say what's up and let's get this party started. Adina, how can we help?
Okay. It's a bit of a complicated story, so I'm going to do my best to just summarize.
Well, Dallas was just talking about the power of storytelling. He loves a complicated story. Let's do that.
All right. Strap in. It's going to be a long one. Okay. Basically, I got married like the day before COVID, pretty much. and moved to a new town with my husband. And we became really close friends with this other couple. And we all moved from Haifa down to Tel Aviv after about a year and a half. And I guess, like, it's kind of important to mention that because none of our families live on the same continent, we kind of tend to become more like family. But regardless, a few months ago, they started acting super weird. And then I kind of confronted them and they basically dumped us. But it gets better. So I sent in a message like about a week ago because she had reached out to me, like the wife and I were pretty close, and was like, oh, I feel really bad. I feel immature that it took me this long to reach out. Can we talk? And I wasn't sure if I should meet up with her, but I did end up meeting up with her. And as we were on a walk talking about things, there was a terrorist attack and we ended up having to shelter in a restaurant for about an hour. And then I kind of ran home because it was horrible. And now I just don't know what to do.
Wait, you never got, oh, you never got your closure because something blew up?
It was a shooting, but close.
Okay, got it. So that's the question, is should you go back?
How far into the conversation did you get before the attack happened?
Like right at the, like right when it like got to it. It was like, honestly, couldn't have written it better.
Aha. Uh-huh. Interesting. So that's the question. Should you call this person who's dumping you and doesn't want to be your friend anymore to go have the second half of an awkward conversation that was interrupted by a shooting?
Or do you just chalk it up?
Yeah. What do you think, Dallas?
I am very much at peace. Like, I don't want to be friends with them, but we are in a lot of like the same social groups.
Well, I wouldn't say you're very much at peace. It was interrupted by a shooting, but I hear your point.
Right. That part was unfortunate.
Yeah. What do you think, Dallas? What do you do? Do you go back for bad information?
I don't know. It's almost like, what do you get out of it? Like, what do you get out of sitting down saying, hey, all right, last time we did this was kind of crazy. You remember the whole shooting thing? But can we talk about us? Like, it's just a weird situation. It's awesome. What are you trying to get out of it, right? If you're at the place where you've moved on, then are you comfortable enough to deal with the discomfort when you might pop into the same places again in the same areas?
Yeah, that's a good point. I think it's been like, it was like 2 months of like radio silence. And then she reached out.
Why did they dump you? Do you really not know, or do you kind of know?
I have some theories.
Let's hear these theories.
I talked to a lot of people because obviously my first instinct was to be that like, I'm awful. But then everyone who I talked to was like, no, they're pretty insecure and kind of like social climbers. But then they kind of realized that the people they were trying to social climb to, I'm friends with. So that's, I think, why she reached out. Because she started seeing me at all the parties that she was like trying to get invited to and kind of that kind of stuff. But now every time we see them, it's just uncomfortable. And I wish I could just, I said my piece and I was like, listen, like, I just don't understand why. Like, it's fine that we're not friends. I just don't really know why you treated me the way you did.
We need to get out of the mires of these like negative friendships.
Yeah, this feels simple to me. Part of getting older is that relationships just dissipate. Friendships just move on. And you just can't stay friends with the same people. It just happens. It's a part of the process of aging. People move in separate directions. And there's no clearer indication that you're not on the same track anymore, friendship-wise, than them saying, I don't want to be your friend anymore. It's just like, it's so clean and simple. It hurts. It's embarrassing. Yeah. But it's so easy to, you don't have to like go, I wonder if I should try to salvage that. It's just like, it's over. Mm-hmm. They did the work for me. Dallas, you think?
Yeah. I think it's just a matter of like, okay, just, you may not have, there might be some unresolved questions out there, but you just have to accept it. That's kind of the way it is. That's a part of moving on.
Yeah.
Just to clarify, I don't want to be their friends anymore.
No, I know. I get just, that.
Yeah.
It was like the middle of a conversation. So it's like this weird.
It feels as if you have been given a sign that this conversation doesn't need to happen.
And everyone's in their own, you have to have empathy. Also, like everyone's in their, she might be in her own state because of something that's happening in their personal life. Everyone's got these own mini tornadoes that are happening in their world, and then you all of a sudden get swept into it, and it's like, this is a good opportunity for you to forge your own way, you know, because it doesn't have to do with your friend's drama or, you know, your family's drama. It's just, well, focus on yourself.
We always, I think I've said this on the podcast before, but there's this saying in AA, avoid the deliberate manufacture of misery. And this, there is no more clear example of manufacturing misery than calling someone to have the second half of a conversation where they tell you you're not good enough to be friends with. I mean, there's nothing about that that seems pleasant at all, especially when the first half was interrupted by a shooting. Just move on.
Fair point. Fair point.
All right, Adina. Dallas, any final words before we let Adina go?
I was just thinking about this is when we first moved into the where we live now. I live in Chicago, and there was our kids played Little League baseball, and there was another couple there, and they were a cool ass couple. Like, we got along, we hung out, and it was like an intense friendship for about a good year. Like, we were dating as couples in a way, like intense. Mm-hmm. And then it just kind of fizzled out, and it was exactly like none of us like dwelled on it. None of us felt the need to dive into it. It just happens.
Yeah.
And like, you just have to accept it sometimes. Like, relationships end, they start and end, like you said. And also, I've grown to learn is that sometimes you or the other person feels like they deserve an answer or they deserve something. And even if you feel that way, it doesn't mean the other person has to come to the table.
I totally agree.
It is a matter of consent on both sides. And so sometimes you just have to accept it and be like, all right, I may want this, or the other person may want it, but you're not in a position to give that. So
no, yeah. I completely agree. And I also feel like when it comes to relationships, kind of like moving on, like there's just something that's healthy about, like, I'm addicted to nostalgia. And so when I'm trying to salvage a relationship like that, it usually has to do with the fact that I keep thinking about the first year of my relationship with that person. And I'm ignoring the reality in front of me, which is I haven't actually had a healthy relationship with this person in years.
Yeah, the majority of the time hasn't been great. I think also the other thing is, for me, I'll just say for me, like in my experience, that sense of like, all right, I need closure. I need to talk about this. I need to, it's actually not about them or the relationship. It's actually about me. It's more of dealing with my own insecurities.
100%.
You know, I want to know what I did wrong or what I did. And like, and at the end of the day, I just have to accept me for who I am and be like, all right, I don't want to know that, or I don't need to know that. I already know my faults. I already know who I am, and let's just move on.
I don't need another person to make me whole, I think is the secret there. All right, Adina, thank you for calling.
Thank you.
Okay, farewell. All right, that was a short one, Dallas. Can we do one more?
Yeah, I'm game.
Hey, Tosh.
Yeah, Mosh.
You ever get so stoned that you disassociate from yourself and become a kind of walking, talking demon?
Every day.
Well, I recommend Dadgrass. For people that are getting too dang high but still want to smoke, try a joint that'll mellow you out without turning you into a servant of the evil Lord Agamemnon.
I love Dadgrass. If you need an afternoon reset, do yourself a favor and snag 5 minutes for a Dadgrass toke break or two. They've got mom grass joints for the perfect pick-me-up to spark your creative flow, or the original Dadgrass joints to quiet your mind after your 9-to-5.
Dadgrass is legal, smokable, organicable, hemp that relaxes your body-able and mellows your mind-able.
The 100% organic pre-rolled joints are very low in THC and high in CBD, so you can enjoy the effects of cannabis while keeping a clear head.
All Dadgrass products are federally legal for ages 18 and over, and it ships right to your door anywhere in the U.S.
Right now, Dadgrass is offering our listeners 20% off your first order when you go to dadgrass.com/honeymoon.
Go to dadgrass.com/honeymoon for 20% off your first order.
That's dadgrass.com/honeymoon.
Hey, Tosh.
Yeah, Mosh.
You ever feel desperately alone, filled with anxiety, depressed about your situation in life, addicted to drugs?
Never!
Well, if you've experienced anything like that, or if you just want a little tune-up, Natasha and I go to therapy, and we found our therapist on Talkspace.
Do you think seeing a therapist or a psychiatrist would be helpful, but you don't have the time to actually find one and meet with them or afford them? Try Talkspace. By doing everything online, Talkspace has made getting the help you want easy, accessible, and affordable.
Now is the time to take your mental health seriously. At Talkspace.com, you can sign up online and get a personalized match with a provider that's right for you, typically within 48 hours.
There's no need to commute to appointments, miss time at work, or line up childcare in order to attend sessions. It's mental health care made easy.
As a listener of this podcast, you will get $100 off your first month with Talkspace when you go to Talkspace.com/honeymoon.
To match with a licensed therapist today, go to Talkspace.com/honeymoon to get $100 off your first month and show your support for the show.
That's Talkspace.com/honeymoon. Get $100 off your first month at Talkspace.com/honeymoon.
Okay, we're going to call Zach in Fremont, California. Never heard of this place?
I have heard of it. I went to school.
I've heard of Fremont.
I went to a school called Seneca Center for the Severely Emotionally Disturbed Youngster in Fremont, California.
That is really sad, honey.
It was a rough place. They had a padded cell in the classroom.
Wait, you went to this place?
I was a severely emotionally disturbed youngster. Zach.
Wow.
I went to, Zach, we're just catching everybody up on some Fremont history here. Fremont, home of the biggest Afghan population in, I think, California, maybe in America, and also home of the Seneca Center for the Severely Emotionally Disturbed Youngster, my alma mater, where kids got locked in padded cells and somebody got stabbed in the neck on my first day there. And
wait, you went to the school?
Yes, it was the worst time of my
life.
Oh,
my God. Did it make you more violent?
It made me, no, it actually... It did the thing, hilariously, it scared me straight. Like, I was such a bad kid and such a, like, little wannabe, and I was just like, no one can tell me what to do ever. I'm not going to listen to anybody. Fuck all these people. And then I got to that school, and I was like, yes, sir. No, sir. Like, get me out of this fucking school. Like, so I found the will to follow the instructions.
I would have done that,
I was just waiting for him to lift up his shirt and say, this is where I got the knife wound right here. Fremont, California. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, you been to Seneca, too?
my story is nowhere near as long, but I did spend 5 hours at the Fremont DMV once.
Oh, that's like, equally a center of Fremont-based suffering.
There was a stabbing as well.
Yeah, there we go.
Also were highly disturbed kids there. So,
all right, Zach.
Wow.
How did I like be able to escape? Fremont.
You're the only person on this call that hasn't suffered in Fremont.
I think if Fremont is so like gentrified and rich, I'm surprised all these people are getting stabbed.
Hey, shit changes,
it sounds
brother.
Terrible to us. Yeah. Just so you know.
All right, so what's happening, Zach? How can we help?
Hey,
oh,
so,
by the way, we have our friend Dallas Goldtooth here, a writer, an organizer, an actor, and a friend of the pod, and of course me and Natasha. How are you?
I'm great.
Can you sit back a little, Zach? Can you scoot that bad boy back?
Yeah.
It's hard.
I'm in my car.
Oh, no, you look.
Let me try some new stuff.
Oh, that looks nice. Oh, there you're looking go. Real okay. good now.
Okay. Yeah, this is the view that takeout gets. When
you get to the- so I use she/her pronouns. So my issue or the reason I'm calling is because of my partner. We have bad communication, and we've been dating for 4 years.
Okay.
And so basically I'm the very big on communication. I talk a lot. I love to talk everything out when something's going wrong. I like to talk about it. I go to therapy every week. I'm into that. When we have a conversation about something important, like our future or something, you know, I'm a trans person. And so like if I get gender dysphoria or something like that, she is completely silent. And so that's a hard thing to move forward with.
Mm.
And I love her and we get along and we have all these great things about our relationship, but our communication is just crap.
Mm.
It's largely because she does not respond at all. Like I tell her something's going on and she gives me just silence.
So she might be looking for you to lead her a little bit. When you try to lead her, is she not responsive or Does she shut you down, do you feel?
Yeah, that's correct. So I think, like I said, she doesn't say anything. So it's very, it's like kind of weird. I'll tell her, hey, I'm having this feeling, or hey, can we talk about this thing in our relationship? And I'll do all, she wants me to lead you or lead her, like you said, but I'll do all the talking and she'll literally say zero things, which is really hard. Hmm.
And when do you ever have moments where you, I mean, it's hard to believe that you eventually must talk about things, right? I mean, eventually communication occurs. It's just in moments of great psychological or emotional intensity that she will shut down. Is that, am I getting that right?
The communication about serious things, I think, just doesn't happen. It's just one way, which is a huge, like, you know, like I said, how am I going to move forward with this person? And we've already been together 4 years. And I'm such a talker. But she's such the opposite. And the communication really never happens on any sort of serious topic. We could talk about Starbucks or something.
Uh-huh.
I'm curious, is she in therapy? Does she go to
therapy? No, she's her medical insurance sucks. There are ways to still get therapy. You know, sliding scale, et cetera, et cetera. But we haven't. Go ahead.
I'm just going to say a deal breaker for me is like communication. If you can't like speak on the same level as someone repeatedly, it might be a sign that this is not a good person for you.
Well, I always do this thing where my feeling is that most people that call in sort of already have their answer. They already know the answer. I would say 90% of people calling in already kind of in their gut know what's up, but just want to verbalize it and have near strangers, but I would say incredibly large celebrities repeat back to them what they heard. So what you're telling me is you're in a relationship with somebody now 4 years and you never have serious emotional communication with that person. Never. Like, on no level do you ever talk about things that go beneath the surface. That's what you're saying. Maybe it's not totally true or you're overstating it, because I can understand why, you know, you would do that. But that's what it sounds like. I mean, and to me, what does that sound like to you? What, Dallas, how does that sound? You're a married man. How does that sound relationship? Why? Zero communication.
It's not looking good. I mean, it's a tough position to be, because you are looking... The concern here, because I feel like I've been in a similar situation, is if you're not having that emotional outlet, because really that's what, when you're talking and trying to communicate with somebody, you're also trying to find a place to help share some of the emotional load that you have. And you might start wanting to find that elsewhere because you're not getting any feedback from your partner. And so that's also a concern that could happen here, is like, you will start looking elsewhere for that emotional outlet, whether it's friends or therapy or whatever it may be. But the other person there is to help you carry that load. I mean, their job is not to make you happy, right? Your partner's job is not to make you happy, but it's also to help share and empathize. I know that in times in my past relationships, I've frozen up, and I've been known to do that because there's a general I'm so afraid about making the wrong decision or saying the wrong thing here that I will say nothing at all, because I'm so full, racked with insecurity as far as like, how am I being a better partner here? And so I would freeze up, and I had to really put a lot of work into it, but I had to put the work in, right? It's not my partner's job to put the work in for me to learn how to communicate. So that's my offer in here. It seems like they have a lot of work to do, and you can't be in a place to lead them through that healing.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, Natasha? Sorry. Go ahead, Zach.
Oh, I was just saying, I think you hit it right on the head. Like, I do look around and, like, try to get the support from elsewhere, and I would like to get it from my partner as well, so I wouldn't have to, like, rely on friends and kind of...
But if you're going to have a partner in life, like, they definitely have to trump, God forbid, sorry, that's the word... your friends, right? Like, right. Your partner is like a person who you have to unload on hourly.
It's in the word. It's in the word. And they are your partner.
Help you carry that weight and like be you and them against the world. And like, you kind of need that support
on a day-to-day level to get through life, I think.
I have another question. Do you ever have a conversation with your partner about, not about the thing that you're going through, not about the stress and the emotional thing that you're going through, but about the way that you communicate? And how does she respond to that conversation? Like, not I'm feeling insecure or I'm feeling dysmorphic or I'm, but actually, you know, I've been thinking about the way we communicate, and it seems like sometimes when I bring you things, if especially if they're heavy, you shut down. Can we talk about that? Have you ever had that conversation?
Yeah, it's interesting that I really have. And she shuts down in that conversation too. And I tell her, like, you know, literally say anything. Like, you're not going to say, I understand what Dallas is saying, but like, you're not going to say the wrong thing. The wrong thing to say is nothing.
Mm-hmm.
But she completely shuts down. Every time.
Yeah.
And like I said, I love this girl, but it's a really huge
problem. What do you, I'm not trying to be flip here or an asshole, although that is my natural orientation, but what is it that you love about her if you do not have any communication? What is what is the love?
How big are her tits?
Yeah. And that's not what I'm asking. Although I'm obviously very curious. No, but what do you love about her if you can't have an emotional connection with her?
We have an emotional connection, I guess, on other levels, but not on that. We like to joke around a lot. We really get each other. She understands my quirks.
Mm-hmm.
Her love language is acts of service. So
I like to wait on her do things for her.
Well, kind of the opposite, actually. She likes to do things for me.
Oh, I see.
So.
Oh, yeah. You might not want to walk away. Actually, now that I'm hearing this, you might not want to walk away. you're like, you know, I can deal with never communicating if she just brings me coffee every morning from now on. I mean, Zach, it sounds very difficult because it sounds like a tough situation. But what would you do if I told you this about my partner? What would you tell me?
Well, the easy answer is like you need to find somebody else, but it's harder than it seems when you're 4 years in and like you care about this person a lot. And honestly, part of it is I feel like breaking up with her would crush her, and I know that's not on me, that's on her, and she has the work to do. But I don't know if you were telling me that.
But
it's hard.
But Zach, there's a space between, I'm curious what Dallas thinks too, there's a space between I've tried, hit the road, we're done, and I'll just accept this lack of communication completely and just enjoy my freshly steamed latte every morning. Like there's something in between there, which is, hey, is communication saying, hey, we're at a crisis point. I am not going to be able to stay in this relationship if it continues like this. We either need to go to therapy together or we need to have a real conversation, or I'm informing you that that this isn't working and I'm on my way out the door. Like, no, it's not your job to not crush her, you know, because she's a person and people break up and that's life. But there is an option that's between, you know, dropper and stay and in an intolerable situation. Dallas, do you think?
Oh, absolutely. I think that's a great way to see it. Like you deserve to be happy. You deserve to get responses from what you're carrying and whatever you need. Like you deserve that. And so you're 4 years in. So I think that relationship does deserve like the effort to be like, look, there are some ultimatums coming down the road here. I need to, like, I'm communicating with you. I'm telling you about what I need. And you're putting the ball in her court, but you're also saying, we're in this together, whether it's therapy together or whether we try to find something else that can work with, because she doesn't have insurance. Like those things are out there, but you deserve it. And
I have a much more cynical view than both of you guys.
Yeah, Natasha's like, hit the road, Zach.
She's like, fuck it.
Well, I just
the string. Cut the string.
There's people who are thinking internally and there's people who aren't. And I think that if you're a person who's drawn towards introspection, that's great. But, you know, some people are superficial. And I think
just can't get beneath the surface, you mean?
Yeah.
That is totally possible that your partner, as lovely as she is, just doesn't have the emotional ability to get beneath the surface for whatever reason. Maybe she's not deep. Maybe she's too scared, but she's just stuck. I mean, that is very, certainly very possible.
Yeah. I like what you said, Moshe, about we're at a crisis point. because I do feel that way. Like, something's got to change, whether it's the communication or whether we do end up breaking up. Where we are right now is not a good spot.
Yeah,
even though it feels comfortable in many ways, it's not.
Well, 4 years becomes 8 years, becomes 12 years before you know it. And you've just been sitting around not having a conversation, but having a nice latte every day for, you know, half of your adult life. And you're just like, wait, why didn't I address this?
And I'll tell you, Moshe and I having a kid together has definitely taken our relationship to like way different levels and like way more challenges. You know, I mean, it's like there's a lot of challenges ahead.
Right, right. Right.
We should have a kid.
I'm hearing
that you should have a kid. That,
it's time. It's time.
That fixes every couple problem ever.
It certainly doesn't fix it.
Yeah. Do you have an emotionally paralyzed partner? We would recommend Parenthood. That's what we
Parenthood.
Actually, Dallas has a couple extras that he could probably send you.
Yeah, I can ship a couple over to you. That's all right.
No, but I think Natasha's right. Like right now, you guys are in it. I don't know this for sure, but it sounds like you're in a emotionally, it sounds like you're processing a lot of stuff in therapy and stuff, but in terms of circumstance, you guys are in the younger phase of your relationship. Mm-hmm. Well, if now she's not communicating with you, what happens when shit hits the fan in the future? What happens if someone gets pregnant? Or someone loses their job or whatever it is, she's already not communicating with you, now is the time to have the conversation about not having the conversation.
Yeah, because communication to me is definitely a deal breaker. Like that's something that's like extremely important to me up at the beginning. Like if you can't resolve things together, then, you know, that is not that's not good for the future.
Zach, I think you know what you have to do.
Agree with that.
Yes. Be brave.
Be brave. Tell her we're at a crisis point and maybe it is the deal breaker. I hate to say it, but it is really rough to go through despite my morning lattes.
Yeah. All right. Well, good luck. I know it is easy to say from the other side of a podcast, like, yeah, deal breaker, move on. But it's like, you know, that's what our job is to just hear it and make fun of it and then tell you back what we're hearing. And that's what we're hearing.
Well, Moshe and I have an Oscar party to go to. Yeah, so we have to wrap it up.
And Dallas has 5 children he has to care for right now. Okay. Yeah. We got to go.
Well, no. Okay. They're some of them are old enough they can care for the young ones.
Oh, that's smart.
That's the hack.
Brilliant. All right, Zach. Good luck.
Okay. Bye.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Bye, Zach.
Bye.
Dallas, you were awesome, and I really feel like the conversation that we had, even though I'm sure you have had it before, for me it was totally enlightening and totally helpful to think about things in those terms, and especially optimism. It's something I struggle with so much, so thank you for bringing a little bit of that positive energy to the pod.
And also, Dallas, is there anything that you can think about in terms of like creating art, drawings, comics, songs about reconnecting with the earth? Like, I know that that my daughter, she's always asking me, like, how can we like be a part of, you know, she just really loves outdoors and wants to know how to like just be a part of everything. I don't know.
She's, what's your plug?
No, I tell you, man, like, I think that, you know, in order to build a better world, a better future, we have to dream of it. And that means unlocking our creative side, whether it's drawing, making podcasts, telling stories, writing, you know, seeing a world in which rather than us, you know, driving motorcycles and fucking gas guzzlers everywhere, that we're riding bikes, cruising through some awesome cities of the future. I think that's where I want to encourage all of us to dream of, and also integrate that dream into the work that we do. That I think that's the key, right? Is imagine a future, but then integrate that imagination into the work that you do, whether it's comedy writing, whether it's TV show running or writing or whatever we may be doing. I think there's a chance for us to really put the work in and really that's combating the paralysis that we were talking about earlier. So I think the system is designed in such a way that we can't imagine, like we don't allow ourselves to dream. And I want to encourage all of us to take the fucking chance here and really bring our dreams into our lives and into our livelihoods.
What about electric bikes? Are you down with those?
Great question.
I'm down with electric bikes. Hell yeah. Electric bikes are great. Solar powered bikes. You know, there'll be
we've awesome. Got like five of them. So if you ever come up this way, we'll go for a ride. Reservation Dogs season 3 will be approacheth. Watch seasons 1 and 2 on FX. Check out everything that Dallas has done, including the organization work that you've done. Thank you so much for joining us.
And I know you're working on with my friend Ari Gold on his idea of Frog Town with bicyclists as well. And creating
I'm looking forward to it.
Sort of utopia.
Where can people find you? Where can they follow you? Give us your...
Just Dallas Goldtooth on all social media, TikToks, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, all of it. Just check out Dallas Goldtooth. Check out Indigenous Environmental Network. Great people's doing great work. And we're all in this together. So I got your back. You got mine.
Dare to dream. Dallas Goldtooth, thank you. Thank you. Thank you for joining us. Appreciate you.
This is it. This is...
Yeah, we're here.
This is all we have.
This is great. I love it. I appreciate it.
Right
okay,
on.
Let
Thank
us
you.
Know when you're in LA, okay?
Okay.
Will do.
All okay. right, Dallas. Thanks
Bye,
again.
Dallas,
bye-bye.
Thanks.
Bye.
Well, Natasha, that was a hopeful and a beautiful episode. And you look beautiful. And I am hopeful that you get to connect with Diana Ross. Dare
Ooh,
to dream. Dare
I'm
to
so
dream,
excited.
Natasha.
I'm dressed for her. I feel like... Nothing's enough.
You're dressed to impress, honey.
Yeah.
All right. Everybody out there in podcast land, we love you. And Natasha, more than anything, I love you.
I love you too.
What kind of fun is waiting for you at Kings Island? The, holy cow, we're way too high and here comes the drop kind of fun. The, make a splash all summer kind of fun. The, I can't believe I ate that whole funnel cake. Let's get another kind of fun. But most importantly, at Kings Island, you'll find for the fun of it kind of fun.
Don't wait to start your fun this season. Kings Island is now open weekends.